You're listening to Shoreditch Radio. Shoreditchradio.co.uk.
Vidal con Titi Henry. Henry para Messi. Messi, el pase para Henry es buenísimo. Henry. ¡Gol! ¡Gol, gol, 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 gol! ¡Titi!
And it looked like it was in. It come back off the bend on Tony.
Para Alves, Alves con Messi, Messi para Xavi. Vamos a ver qué hace Xavi. Esconde el balón, Xavi. ¡Qué balón para Messi! ¡Messi, Messi, Messi! ¡Puede marcar Messi! ¡Gol, gol, 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 gol! ¡Gol de Messi!
We are back at Shoreditch Radio HQ, rested and ready for the new Premier League season, which is now just a matter of days away. And it will be our pleasure over the next hour to help bring you right up to speed before the first ball is even kicked. Are Arsenal capable of snatching the crown from their London neighbours Chelsea after beating the champions in this season's curtain raiser at Wembley? British journalist and author Chaz Newkirk-Burden weighs in on the subject later. How do we see this season's top four shaping up? Who do we think could become the surprise package, the dark horses? And Mike Parkin, host of the Watford podcast from the Rookery End, is also with us to discuss his side's chances of avoiding the drop. Take a Bow and the Rumour Mill are back by popular demand and will be accompanied, as always, by a playlist hand-picked for your listening pleasure. Settle in with Shoreditch Radio's premier football talk show. Help us kick some sense back into football. And welcome to In Off The Post. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It feels great to be back in the studio and to once again be speaking to all of you wonderfully generous people. Thank you, as always, for taking the time to tune into us live, or if you're so inclined, for catching up with the podcast of this week's show. Some great guests on the way this hour as we build up to the start of the new Premier League season. But right here in the studio and in the absence of my regular co-host, who I presume is sunning himself somewhere on a beach in the Mediterranean, please give it up for a man as handsome as he is opinionated, a supreme footballer himself, but the only person in North London to spend more time on the treatment table than Jack Wilshere. Put your hands together for Lawrence Rispoli.
Hello. Not too happy about that one.
Lawrence, a pleasure to have you back alongside me for one of these broadcasts. It's been too long.
Yeah, I needed some time out away from In Off The Post to get back to football ways.
Well, it's fine because John was far cheaper than you. So, look, let's kick it off with a simple question. How excited are you for the start of this season?
Oh, really excited. Weekends are boring without football. Absolutely. These are right. Pre-season moneymakers don't quite match up to a premiership.
And look, we have had some fascinating sport over the course of the summer. But you're right, we've all been watching carefully as our favourite teams prepare for another Premier League marathon. And I agree with you, I'm tired of watching that sort of football. I want to watch some proper football, and I cannot wait. The Premier League season, of course, kicks off this Saturday with Manchester United versus Spurs, and we'll dive right into it all in just a moment. Remember, you can get in touch with us here on In Off The Post by tweeting us at IOTP Show, or by leaving a comment on the Facebook fan page at facebook.com/Shoreditch Radio IOTP. Back in a sec. No better way than with a little Michael Jackson to warm up ahead of what promises to be a great episode here on Shoreditch Radio. My co-host Lawrence is alongside me, and before we get to our first guest, Enzo, I'm interested to know what you think of the way the so-called bigger clubs have prepared themselves over the summer, specifically whether or not you think the title could be on its way back to Manchester in May.
My opinion?
Yes.
It's staying in London. Don't know where yet, but it's definitely staying in London. The way City have prepared in pre-season, from what I've seen, they don't look too convincing. And United don't seem to be gelling, from what I've seen as well. I mean, they've brought in names. It's like Football Manager. It must be fun to be a part of. But like getting them all together.
And I mean, it's interesting you say that. I'm perusing through some stats here as we speak. And, you know, Man United's wage bill, if you actually look at it in a table form, who pays the biggest, going down to who pays the least, in the Premier League, Man United are top.
Man United, as much as it hurts me to say, are the biggest club in the world. I think it's all relative to the size of the club, and if they can, they might as well.
But then, if you're going to spend that much money, aren't they under the most pressure to win it? And if they're not, perhaps, you know, should they be?
I think they're always going to be under pressure just due to their history. Again, no team, especially in England, where it's the most competitive league, no team's going to walk it for years on end. So their time will come again, unfortunately.
You think it's going to be sooner rather than later? They're certainly trying to make it that way.
I don't think there's a quick fix. I think it will happen, and hopefully it won't happen in Van Gaal's period, because it should be Arsenal's turn.
Well, look, Man United fans, we'd love to hear from you on the subject. Tweet us at IOTP Show and give us your thoughts, your predictions for the season, even your abuse. We can take it. But look, I agree with you. I think we've seen a real shift at Old Trafford over this summer. For me, it's a transfer policy shift, you know, away from... It's almost as though they've accepted that Van Gaal isn't going to be around long enough to run this club with the long-term view that Fergie did it. So, you know, we're a commercial footballing superpower, like Real Madrid, like, you know, you alluded to them earlier. So we're going to flex our financial muscles and we're going to build a team of Galacticos of our own.
Again, as I said, it'd be fun to be a part of, but it doesn't happen anymore in football. Chelsea were the first team that got money, basically, and started throwing it about. It doesn't happen. Everyone's got money now. It's a lot harder to do, and success attracts big players, and there's not a big group of world-class players anymore. So having them come to Manchester is going to be quite difficult, no matter how much you throw at them.
And I mean, it's interesting you're talking about superstar players when Van Gaal's reputation is probably built on his work with young talent. You know, you think of Seedorf and Kluivert, of Xavi and Iniesta, even Thomas Müller attributes a lot of credit to his work with Van Gaal growing up. So does this pose a big problem for Man United that they're really going for these, you know, you could even argue over the hill superstars?
It's a quick fix. There isn't a big bunch of 24, 25 year old world class players anymore. There's a lot of average players, and then you'll start paying over the price for 28, 29 year olds when they've got a couple years left. And I mean, it's not ideal, but if that's how they want to go about it, that's how they're going to have to go about it.
I mean, it clearly does. It seems that way anyway. We know that it's a league that Van Gaal really does want to win. Before retiring, he's actually reported to have promised his wife that he'll retire at 65. He's now 63. And, you know, he's looking for, as you say, the quickest route to short-term success.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine people promise their wives a lot. but football does rule a lot of people. So I see him being around longer if he hasn't got that success yet.
You're listening to In Off The Post with myself, Adonis, and Lawrence, my co-host. And after the break, we'll be joined by the journalist, author, and Arsenal fan, Charlie Nuki Burden. We'll be right back. welcome back to the show, and it's now time we revisit the small matter of the Community Shield on Sunday, where Arsene Wenger was at long last able to get one over on his opposite number Jose Mourinho as his side reclaimed the trophy they won last summer with another win over the current Premier League champions. Arsenal's win was unfortunately somewhat overshadowed by an incident after the game where it appeared as though Wenger ignored Mourinho's offer of a handshake as he descended the Wembley steps. First of all, let's hear what Jose Mourinho made of it all.
Well, I was doing what the status of my club and my status as a manager, I think I have to do for myself and for the club, which was to be there for the winners, to wait for them in a point that you only miss me if you want to miss me. And every Arsenal player come in my direction, which was the easiest thing to do because I was just there. And if other people didn't come in my direction, that's not a problem, that's not a story, that's not the end of the world, and I have no more comments on that.
And I mean, if someone tried to shake my hand after a week of criticising me in the press, in fact, since he returned to English football together, I don't think I'd be too interested either.
I wouldn't be shaking his hand. There'd be other stuff going on. There's no way you disrespect someone like that, especially at that age, and think you're going to get away with it.
And joining us now via Skype is the British journalist and author of multiple books for Arsenal Football Club, Chaz Newkey-Burden. Chaz, how are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm very well, and it really is a pleasure to have you here on the show. Chaz, the Community Shield win was overshadowed somewhat, at least in the media, by the now infamous handshake that never was. But there was, of course, a game of football on display as well. So firstly, what did you make of Arsenal's performance on Sunday?
Well, I think throughout the pre-season, including the Community Shield, the main thing I've taken away from it is the team spirit and the cohesion and the chemistry in the team, which we've not seen in an Arsenal team to this degree since the Invincibles era.
Okay, and I mean, considering Arsenal's pre-season, I mean, their transfer business, and I guess perhaps also the way they ended last season, do you believe Arsenal win the league?
We were definitely seriously challenged, which we haven't done really since we last won it. Can we win it? Yes, we can. It will very much depend, particularly on Manchester United, I feel, because I could see Chelsea and Manchester City sort of stagnating a little bit next season. But Manchester United have really gone in big and strong with the signings. Mm-hmm. If they all come off, then they're going to be proper contenders, which they weren't last year. If they don't quite blend quickly enough, then we could get in there and really challenge and possibly win it.
So what do you feel is the element that's really holding us back? I mean, you're almost hinting that you want us to do a little bit more transfer business before the window closes.
Well, I think just what's holding us back is that we're almost like newcomers. It's almost like we've maybe 2 years ago been promoted into a mini-league. And we're in there with teams that have been in this mini-league for quite a while. Almost like we were relegated in 2005 when our last golden era came to an end. And so there's just that element of inexperience there. And there's just that slight worry that when the pressure comes in, that the teams and clubs who've been sort of in the mix much more than us over the last, say, 8 years will just have that psychological edge. That's my main fear. In terms of signings, of course the Arsenal fans are having the characteristic meltdown over the fact that we've only signed Petr Cech. I actually think there's an argument that the best thing Wenger can do is not buy anyone else.
Based on the fact that the cohesion in the squad is so volatile, as you say.
Yeah, precisely. It's so strong that chucking in, say, a Benzema, God, that would be a very exciting signing. Mm-hmm. There is that danger that it could sort of knock that out of place a little bit, maybe put a few noses out of joints, but just get the flow gone. And then, sure, after 3 or 4 months, he would make us, without a doubt, stronger. Mm-hmm. But by that time, how much have we lost? And if you actually, how much sort of points have we lost? And when you look at the finest hour of Wenger, that was obviously the Invincible Zero. The only player he added the summer before that of any significance was Jens Lehmann.
That's a very good point. And look, Chaz, let me take you back to Sunday just briefly again. How important was it, in your own opinion, that Wenger was finally able to beat Mourinho and also that his team were able to beat the current champions?
I think the former of the important. I think the form of the two that you mentioned is the really important one, because last season, you know, we beat Manchester City really more comfortably than we beat Chelsea, and that didn't, you know, have much of an effect in certainly the first half of the season when we really struggled. So while it's always good to beat the champions, I think the biggie there is beating Mourinho, because it's a huge weight off his shoulders. It's going to have rattled, I think, Mourinho. He did look like he was a bit sort of thrown by it at the end. We won't have that whole build-up, you know, when we first played Chelsea in the league, we won't have that whole tiresome build-up that we've had time after time of, you know, will this finally be the time? Will Wenger ever beat Mourinho? But I have to say, all the stuff at the end did overshadow the football. I did think it was superb, and I thought their clash last season was superb. I mean, I live for these moments, and I think with Wenger and some of the managers he's sort of jousted with over the years, there's been an element of the theatre to it. I do get the feeling that he genuinely dislikes Mourinho, and I do find it very funny. And in fact, going back to last season's clash at Stamford Bridge, when they had their little tete-a-tete, the moment I found funniest was the moment where Mourinho looked up at him and thought, wow, you really are tall. You are so much taller than me. And I think he actually got a little bit scared, and there was about a split second, if you watch it back on YouTube, where he could have gone, he could have fallen over. And much as I adore and idolise Arsene Wenger, I have to say, if you were knocked to the floor by him, that would be a really bad look for a younger man.
Agreed. Chaz, listen, thank you so much for speaking to us this afternoon. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I of course hope we get you down to Shoreditch Radio HQ sometime in the future. Before you go, of course, there is the small matter of choosing your parting song. What's it going to be, Chaz?
I would love the song Highbury Sunshine by the band Yeah, which takes us back to the glorious former home of Arsenal Football Club.
If there was ever any debate as to the biggest Arsenal fan we've ever had on the show, I think you just put it to bed. Our thanks once again to Chaz. You're listening to In Off The Post, and after the break, we'll be speaking to Mike Parkin about the Premier League new boys, Watford.
I was nothing but a child when they took my heart away. Now I stand in single file underneath the grey cloud. Tried to make me hers and to take my heart away, to relieve me of my cares and to love me truly. But there'll never be a girl who can take my heart away from the side of Charlie George lying in the sunshine. I've watched them all my life, little men in red and white. No, I'll never leave their sides, little men in red and white.
Welcome back to In Off The Post with myself, Adonis, and my co-host for the hour, Lawrence Rispoli. Before the break, we spoke to the British journalist and author Chaz Newkirk-Burden about his hopes for his beloved Arsenal side this season. And a quick reminder that you can catch up with anything that you might have missed on today's show via the iTunes store or by streaming the podcast through Mixcloud, the links to which are all over the show's Twitter feed at IOTP Show. We are moments away from an interview that I'm really looking forward to with the host of the Watford podcast from the Rookery End. But first, let's talk rumour mill. The transfer window is still open for another few weeks, and with Premier League spending at around 500 million, that's 335 million short of last summer's total, I think it's fair to expect that a few more deals will go through before September 1st. Now, Lowell, the columns in today's papers have been full of gossip, as they have been throughout the summer, and we'll investigate a few of those in just a moment, but at the top of the show I mentioned the term dark horses. And given the transfer business that some of the middle order teams have conducted thus far, who do you think have dealt particularly well?
Ooh, Interesting. I would look at Stoke if they start the way they ended the season. Somehow Mark Hughes has managed to do what he didn't do at QPR.
Yeah, where was that little black book?
Yeah, I don't know. He's pulled out some absolute worldy players. And if he gets them playing well, they could be up there. I mean, they're a hard team to beat anyway. Before he was there, and with the players he's brought in, they could get going.
Do you think they're going to miss Nzonzi, Begovic?
I don't think they'll miss Begovic. I think a goalkeeper does make a difference, but in Jack Butland, they've got a great young goalie.
Also brought in Haugard, who I saw play against Arsenal in the Buckley's Osiers Trophy. He was good. So they've got options there too.
I can't comment. If I don't know the player, I can't comment. Nzonzi will be a big miss. I do feel they'll replace him. There are similar players out there. I mean, he wasn't the best, but he was good. I also think Crystal Palace will be up there. If Pardew, again, the way they ended the season was quite impressive, and they brought in a bit more quality than what they already have. They could swap players like Jedinak with Kabai. That's one thing. I mean, they brought in Bamford and Conor Wickham, so they're also looking to build for the future as well as with English players.
Still a place for Dwight Gayle in the team?
I heard he was going out on loan. I mean, a player like Dwight Gayle never hurts to have in your squad someone that's going to work hard, especially up front. You make defences drop deeper, which gives players like Kabai to play a bit more. They keep hold of Bolasie. It'll be like having a new signing. He's a direct player that you do need. And yeah, I think those two will be up there. I think they might start replacing Tottenham and Liverpool.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Tottenham haven't invested well from what I've seen. Pochettino got Southampton playing, and he doesn't seem to have got Tottenham playing at all. They do have the players on the team sheet, but they're not clicking. Alderweireld is a great signing for any team. I'd say literally he'd walk into any Premiership team squad.
I think maybe not
starting 11, but definitely in the squad.
Could form a good central defensive partnership with Vertonghen, of course.
They could, and if they've kept hold of Lloris, so they've got a good base to work on.
As yet they have. I mean, there still could be another twist in that one.
I mean, it's all gone quiet, so I'd imagine he'd give it one more season. Mm-hmm. And it really depends what Harry Kane can do. But
came out today claiming he's not a one-season wonder.
From who?
He did.
Oh, yeah? I mean, self-praise is no praise, basically. But, I mean, of course, I'd love it if he does, because it means England should start doing better, but I don't see it. He started shooting from everywhere. In the under 21s, he wasn't the greatest to watch. But it's just, football's all about opinions, I suppose.
Fair enough. And look, let's talk a bit about those opinions some more. There's some gossip. If I just rifle through some of the top stories in the papers today, Southampton making a £7 million bid for Celtic's defender Virgil van Dijk. Now, this is a player that was linked with Arsenal not so long ago. It would be another astute signing by Ronald Koeman.
I think players of that age, was he about 24 years old, where they've been playing first team football at a good level, will start to look at those, I'd call them Europa League sort of teams. I mean, you don't go from the top Scottish team to the top English team.
No.
So that wouldn't be the worst signing, and he could come in and just be an absolute star, and then probably nick a move elsewhere.
And I know I'm returning to Man United here, but Di Maria's move has been delayed because he was too tired to have a medical after a 20-hour trip from his native Argentina to Doha.
People need to get off this guy's case. I mean, it hasn't worked for at United. I would have liked to have seen him do it for another season just to prove something to people. I mean, you'd be tired after a 20-hour flight. I'd be shattered, and I love my sleep. So I don't blame him.
And look, okay, I agree with you to an extent. Di Maria deserved another season in the Premier League. They stand to lose, let's say, roughly $15 million on him. They've lost a similar amount on Falcao, you could say, in the amount they paid him over the season for his wages.
And unfortunately, United are the only team that they can just write that sort of money off.
And look, they look to do that with Pedro in a £20 million deal that could be completed in the next 48 hours. You think that's a good move?
I'm not entirely sure. I think players like Pedro, to some extent, you've got Busquets at Barcelona, they suit a system and everyone's got to be on that same wavelength. And if they come into a team playing a different style, they just might just get overlooked and it might just not work.
Rumor has it. Well, one team who will certainly be hoping to have the term dark horses attributed to them this year is Watford. And joining us now is the presenter of the Watford podcast from the Rookery End, Mike Parkin. Mike, how are you, my good man?
I'm very good, increasingly excited.
Well, look, it's a real pleasure for us to have you on the show today. I guess I, like many of our listeners, am guilty of paying more attention to the Premier League than to the Championship last year. So if you'd be so kind as to try and quickly school us on Watford's journey back to the promised land of English football and how your side managed it last year.
Well, last year in the Championship, if you didn't pay much attention, you missed out on one of the most exciting divisions in a long time. It was very, very close to the top there. There was Watford, Bournemouth, Norwich, Middlesbrough fighting it out for a long period with only a couple of points between us for probably the last couple of months of the season. An absolute ding-dong battle. Watford managed to get promotion in the penultimate week. They won away at Brighton and results fell our way, so we were the first team to be promoted. Unfortunately, came up a bit short winning the Championship. We conceded a last-minute goal to throw away the Championship, which was a bit of a shame, bit of a disappointing way to end the season. But we did it playing some good football. We scored a lot of goals. We played some decent, attractive stuff. And I think we thoroughly deserved it. I think at the end of the table, it's a cliche, but the end of the season, the table doesn't lie, and we deserve to go up. And we probably did it. Bournemouth got a lot of plaudits for the way they play football. Mm-hmm. But Watford did it in some style as well. We scored a lot of goals, and some of them are pretty good-looking goals as well.
Well, look, new manager now, Kike Flores at the helm. Some great experience, both as a player and as a coach. Obviously, most recently, I guess, leading Atletico Madrid to the Europa League title in 2010, where I believe they beat Fulham. I think it was 2-1 in the final. Now, a lot of people understandably upset with the way Jokanović was dismissed after the job he did to get you guys up there. But those same people pegging Flores to be a big hit at Watford. Where do you fall on all this?
I think you've obviously got to be disappointed that Jokanović wasn't given the opportunity to finish off the job he did. Potsos took over at Watford 3 seasons ago now. This will be their fourth. And they bestowed on Watford almost immediately a wealth of riches in terms of players. You may well remember that when they came in, the first thing they did was bring in Gianfranco Zola as manager. And then a whole host of players from across Europe. And we nearly got promoted then, but what we've seen over the first 2 years was that we had good players, but we couldn't quite knit the team together, couldn't quite get it right, and ultimately that's what Jokanović did. He really got that team playing as a team, working incredibly hard, which you have to do in the Championship. You can't just turn up away at Huddersfield and expect to win because you've got players who've played in the Champions League. You have to earn it, and what Jokanović did, he instilled that in the team, and the supporters recognised that, and there was a real big connection between that Watford team, the manager, and supporters. So there was obviously a lot of I don't really want to use the word disappointment, because the Potsos haven't really done much wrong in Watford fans' eyes so far, but I think it's a shame, shall we say, that Jokanović wasn't given the chance to carry on. But the owners obviously believed that someone else was better equipped to do the job. There is no room for sentiment in football, as we all know. They've taken a tough decision to get rid of a popular manager, mm-hmm. and replace him with someone who, as you rightly say, has got a lot of pedigree. But he'll have to hit the ground running. There's a lot of new signings have been brought in. On paper, they look like quality signings, but there are a lot of them, so he'll have his job, his work cut out to get the value of the team quickly, because we've got a reasonable start to the season, but I think if we don't pick up some points in that early portion, that first sort of 6 to 8 weeks, then they're going to find it very difficult.
Well, I was just about to ask, you know, you, by your own admission, said that Watford played some impressive stuff last year, as did Bournemouth. Norwich, of course, blew everyone away in the playoffs. But fans of each of those clubs, you know, I hope you would agree, must be realistic in terms of their aspirations for a season in the top flight. So how high do you think you can finish?
It's really difficult. I mean, I think ultimately, we need to survive. And that's the be-all and end-all. If we win it by one goal on the last day of the season, so be it. You could argue that would be as valuable as finishing, you know, 14th, 15th, somewhere a little bit more comfortable than mm-hmm. that. I think I hate to talk about money, but the new TV deal
comes in next
year. So if a team like Watford can find themselves in the Premier League where that money really kicks in, then we can really look to sort of establish ourselves as a, as a Premier League club. As a promoted supporter, you're always hopeful. You have to be optimistic. You have to have
have
faith in your team. And if you can't be optimistic and excited before the ball's kicked, when can you? But as you rightly said in your question, you've got to be realistic. I've seen some of our supporters suggest we might be able to finish as high as 14th, 15th. I'd absolutely take your arm off for that. If we can finish 17th, I'd be absolutely delighted, to be honest.
And you mentioned the new signings that you come in. And aside from the likes of, you know, Troy Deeney, Vidra, Kechianya, who should we be looking out for next season?
I think the two strikers that we signed Matthew Vidra on a permanent deal now. You may have heard a little bit about him. He did have a little stint in the Premier League on loan with West Brom. It didn't work out for him. So I think that might work out in our favour, because he'll have something to prove. He's a very determined young man. And the thing that Vidra is blessed with is absolutely electric pace. And I don't care what league in the world it is, if you've got that express pace, you're going to worry defenders. So I think he's one that may well have snuck under the radar a little bit, because Troy Deeney's rightly attracted a lot of the attention. He's had three magnificent seasons for Watford, and we all know that the little bit of bother he got into. And for him to turn his career and lives around in the fashion that he does, warrants the attention he's got. The other guy up front is Odeyemi Ighalo, Nigerian international, who he just seems to have that happy knack of turning up, and the ball will bounce off his shin, off his backside, or he'll poke it home from 2 yards. He just scores all the time. And over a period of, I think, the last 2 months, he was outscoring everyone in Europe last year.
Wow.
And if he can maintain that in the Premier League, if he can maintain that happy knack in the Premier League, then we might be worrying a few defences. I think if you ask any Watford fan about our performances last year, defensively is probably where our biggest concerns lay. We probably let in too many goals. So it'll be interesting to see how Aurelio Gomez performs in goal. He'll be familiar to pretty much all of your listeners, I'm sure.
That's right.
Obviously, he played for Tottenham and played for Brazil. It'd be interesting to see how his career sort of kicks off back in the Premier League. And a guy that's been with us for a couple of years, a guy called Gabriel Angela. Now, he's a centre-back, but he's a footballing centre-back. Very comfortable on the ball, scores a lot of goals from set pieces, headers and so on and so forth. So it'd be fascinating to see how these sort of players who have looked the part in the Championship, but very classy, how they will look in the Premier League up against what a much better class opposition.
And Mike, finally, where, when and how can our listeners tune in to catch the podcast from the Rookery End?
So you can check us out on the website, which is fromtherookeryend.com, or you can find us on iTunes. Just search for From the Rookery End, and it's out pretty much every month.
Easy. Mike, thank you so much for speaking to us. Good luck for the season ahead. And please do tell our listeners what song you've chosen for us to play out.
Well, it's a bit of a guilty pleasure for me. I'm trying to get my kids into decent music, so the song I'm going to play out is Enter Sandman by Metallica.
Mike, thank you. Well, Lawrence, I feel like we've covered all the bases on this week's show. I am almost ready to welcome in the new season. But first, it's time for someone to take a bow.
I'll take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow. You have been immense.
Yes, it's that time of the week where we celebrate the wonderfully absurd side to the beautiful game, and I was in no short supply of contenders for this week's award. And with an entire off-season of incidents to choose from, I've narrowed it down to just three. Lawrence, listen carefully because it will be your duty to choose a winner. And here we go. First up, it has to be Kiev's Ukrainian winger Andriy Yarmolenko for trying to force through a move to a Premier League side by admitting that, "Of course I'd like to play for a bigger club than Stoke, but it would be nice to play against Chelsea, Arsenal, United and City again." That's gotta hurt. Next simply has to be Dedryck Boyata, the 24-year-old Belgian international headed a late winner in Celtic's Champions League first leg qualifier against Karabag at Celtic Park, only to then take out the ball boy with his celebratory knee slide. Didn't even say sorry after. And finally, how could we ignore the evil genius that is Jose Mourinho for having the sheer gall to argue that Arsenal had parked the bus in the Community Shield victory over his side on Sunday? Hypocrisy, thy name is Jose. Lawrence, that's your lot. Who's it going to be?
I'm going to give it to Mourinho. Let him win something this week.
Oh, take the knife and twist it, why don't you? Okay, congrats, Jose Mourinho. It may well be the only thing you win this season. Andy Gray, take us home.
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that, take a bow. You have been immense.
And I'm sorry to say it because I've simply enjoyed today's show so much, but I'm afraid we are out of time. A huge thank you to my special guests Mike Parkin and Chaz Newkey-Burden. An enormous thank you to the man sat beside me, my co-host for the afternoon, Lawrence Rispoli. And last but by no means least, to all of you for listening. Remember to get in touch with the show on Twitter at IOTP Show. Like the fan page at facebook.com/ShoreditchRadioIOTP and share the podcast with everyone you speak to over the next few days. Download and subscribe for free on the iTunes Store. I've been Adonis, live on Shoreditch Radio. This has been In Off The Post, and I'll forgive you just this once for forgetting to kick some sense back into football, because the Premier League is back this weekend!